counsel. Our next case is Bennett v. Gatz, 083262. And is that Ms. or Mrs. Tumialan? Tumialan. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel. Your Honor, we're here before you today on an appeal that asks the Court to determine what evidence is required to satisfy a prima facie case in a Batson challenge. The evidence in this case, or the argument presented by the pro se defendant in the trial court, showed that he was of the same race as the excluded jurors, that there was a pattern of the strikes were consistent with giving rise to an inference of discrimination. What I mean by that is 50% of the state strikes were used to exclude the state used four of its available strikes to use to exclude jurors, two of which were directed to African-American jurors. This resulted in a disproportionate use of the strikes because what it did was 50% of the state strikes excluded what represented 17.8% of the prospective jurors. That disproportionately affected the African-American potential jurors, resulting in no representation by African-Americans on the regular jury. The two jurors that were excluded were also of the same heterogeneous group, in that both of them were African-Americans, which was the same race as the defendant, and shared common characteristics with jurors that were also permitted to serve. The state makes reference in its briefs in this court that the two jurors that were excluded were crime victims, but the record of the jury questioning shows that there were at least five jurors that were allowed to serve that also were crime victims. The last factor with respect to Batson, which relates to the identity of the witnesses and the crime victim, is negligible here because we were dealing with a corporation. But the trial court and the appellate court, the Illinois appellate court, found that these factors did not weigh in favor of finding a prima facie case, and they dismissed the challenge, and that was incorrect for two reasons. First, there was an inordinate amount of focus on the defendant's conduct because the defendant himself used one of his challenges to excuse an African-American juror. But that conduct really is not relevant in determining whether or not the prima facie case for purposes of Batson has been established. The trial court also made reference to the fact that the ultimate composition of the jury represented, in his opinion, was a United Nations, suggesting that because the racial composition included other minorities, that there was no systematic exclusion of a particular racial group, in this case African Americans. What this did was it resulted in a collapsed proceeding because the court went straight from evaluating whether or not the prima facie case was actually established to determining whether or not discrimination was actually proven. And Johnson teaches that that is not the analysis for purposes of establishing a prima facie case. There's no need to prove anything at that stage. It simply is there a reasonable inference that discrimination took a role in the reason why certain jurors were excluded? The reference to judicial or to the racial composition, with the trial court's reference to the United Nations representation on the jury, to conclude that there's no discrimination at the use of the strikes was also improper because that results in an afterthought. Basically, because the jury consists of a certain racial mix to it, that the state did not exercise its strikes in a racially discriminatory fashion. But that doesn't follow because it doesn't, just because there are some minorities on the jury does not change the fact or neutralize the inference that when a particular juror, in this case, Juror Jones and Yates, when they were excluded, that the state did not use that strike in a racially motivated manner. There's an argument that's raised in the briefs that the statistical disparity that is referenced by the defense does not play a factor here and does not dispel the fact that there was no prima facie case, but that reliance on Sims is misplaced because in that case there was the decision of the appellate court was affirmed because African Americans were actually overrepresented on the jury, and so the statistical analysis did not play out. But when you look at the statistical facts here, we have 17.8% of the jury, the potential jurors that were African American. 50% of the strikes were directed to that 17.8% part of the potential jury. And ultimately, there were no African American jurors that served on the regular jury. There was an alternate that was African American. However, he did not participate in the deliberations. And he was selected after the regular jury was determined. And again, the fact that the state chose not to exercise a strike against the alternate juror does not neutralize the inference that the strikes against the jurors that were excluded were racially motivated. This court's opinion in Stevens dealt squarely with the issue that we're faced here with today, which is whether or not a prima facie case was established. And in that case, the court looked to the statistical disparity, which is similar to the disparity that's present here, and the fact that the commonality of the jurors that were excluded and the ones that were excluded were similar, in that certain jurors were permitted to serve having had the same characteristics. In that case, it dealt with work history and educational background, whereas in this case, we're talking about crime victims. We have several jurors in this case who served, were crime victims and nonetheless served, but other jurors were not permitted to serve despite the fact that they had the same characteristic. That gives rise to a racial inference, which is sufficient to establish a prima facie case. The arguments relating to whether or not the jurors or the questioning by the state was race neutral or was but otherwise satisfies Batson really goes to the second stage, because here the trial court did not ask the state to give race neutral reasons for its strikes. It instead proceeded to dismiss the challenge outright, finding that there was no prima facie case established because there was an alternate juror in that served that was African American, and the United Nations comment. The Illinois Appellate Court opinion in People v. Harris found that there was a prima facie case stated under these similar facts. And in that case, as here, in that case there was 50% of the strikes. In that case, there were a total of 6 strikes. The state used 50% of those, or 3, to exclude African Americans. The court then referenced the fact that there were some jurors on the regular jury and at least one alternate that were African American that shared the same race as the defendant. The appellate court found that was insufficient, that those facts, the statistical disparity and the fact that the court relied on the racial composition of the jury was not sufficient to dispel the idea that there was not a prima facie case. Finally, the reference to the disparity in questioning, it's not so much the types of questions that were asked of the jurors, but the fact that certain questions were asked of jurors and questions were not asked of other jurors that shared otherwise similar characteristics. The Miller L case teaches that in that case, it was the manner in which the death penalty was described to the jurors that there was a stronger language was used to certain jurors and a softer language used on another jurors. And the court in that case found that in and of itself could not allow the court to rely on, or excuse me, the state to rely on a race-neutral exercise of, well, this person is more ambivalent or less ambivalent towards the death penalty. Taken to the next level, if the manner in which a question is posed can factor into whether or not a prima facie case is established, then it follows that the fact that certain questions are posed to some jurors and not others, that are otherwise similarly situated, should also play a role in determining whether a prima facie case is established.
Now, you're into your rebuttal time. You can continue, but I didn't know if you wanted to say.
I do want to save some time for rebuttal, and if there are no questions, I would like to.
Thank you, Ms. Toomey-Allen.
Thank you.
Is that Ms. or Mrs. Seaburn?
Mrs. Good morning, Your Honors. Erica Seaburn from the Illinois Attorney General's Office here on behalf of the respondent. May it please the Court. The State Appellate Court did not unreasonably apply Batson in determining that petitioner had not made his prima facie case. The Supreme Court stated in Batson that courts should examine the facts and circumstances surrounding jury selection to determine whether a prima facie case is made, and in Johnson v. California, the court went on to say that states have a great deal of flexibility in determining how they will test whether or not that prima facie case has been made. The State Appellate Court here properly recited the Batson standard and then used Illinois' own test to determine whether the prima facie case had been made. It's the seven-part factor test that they elucidated in People v. Williams. Now, this court has examined that very test in its previous decision in Franklin v. Sims and determined that the factors of the Williams test are important and appropriate to consider, and that the State Appellate Court cannot have been unreasonable for using that test as would be required to receive relief under AEDPA. Petitioner does not argue that the Williams test is an unreasonable application of Batson, and here he hasn't shown that the way the State Appellate Court weighed these factors was unreasonable. Although the state used two peremptory challenges on African Americans, there were only five African Americans in the entire veneer pool. And this goes to petitioner's argument about whether or not it's relevant to consider the fact that petitioner himself exercised a peremptory challenge on one African American juror. While that may not weigh about his prima facie case, it does explain what happened to one of the very few African Americans in the veneer pool. There were only five out of 28 to begin with.
Can I just stop you for a minute? Because you agree that the trial court should have, when he made the allegation of that there was a Batson problem, that he should have asked the state to articulate a race-neutral reason?
No, Your Honor.
That was necessary.
No, Your Honor. We think that our position is that the trial court correctly held that petitioner had not made a prima facie case here. Of the three remaining,
so you don't think that's a better practice to get the basis?
Well, Your Honor,
the way he looked at it, he looked at everybody that was on the pool and said it was the United Nations gathering, but he never got any response from the prosecutor as to the reason that African Americans were excluded.
Well, yes, there are two answers to that. The first is why not just ask the prosecutor to state his reasons at that point? But the Supreme Court made it very clear in Batson that Batson is supposed to be a three-part test and that there is a requirement of a prima facie case. The Supreme Court could have held in Batson that the minute that a defendant says Batson and the state has, in fact, excused an African-American juror, that the state should be automatically required to start stating its reasons. But they declined to do so, recognizing probably the interest that the state has in keeping their challenges peremptory. If we require prosecutors to always give their reasons without requiring a prima facie case to be made first, they may be required to reveal part of their trial strategy or their underlying thought process and who they're trying to get on the jury. The second answer to Your Honor's question is in the response to petitioner's argument about the United Nations comment. First of all, the appellate court didn't rely on this particular piece of information from the trial court when it was making its determination. And, of course, it's the appellate court's holding that we're reviewing under AEDPA. The information about the other jurors and what their races were and what the other racial makeup of the entire veneer pool turns out to be extraneous here, but that doesn't mean it was improper for the trial court to put it onto the record. At the time that the trial court's making this statement, he doesn't know how broad the defendant might want to make his Batson challenge in the future. For example, when this court reviewed the record in U.S. v. Stevens, the court did end up considering the other racial minorities in the jury pool other than African Americans because it turned out to be relevant to the type of claim that Mr. Stevens was making. Now, if Mr. Bennett here had made a Batson claim based on the state has excluded all racial minorities from the jury as opposed to just African Americans, then the trial court would have provided us with a very valuable piece of information. The United Nations comment turns out to be irrelevant here, but that doesn't mean that the trial court improperly applied Batson, who's just trying to make as complete a record as possible for the appellate court, and that's particularly appropriate given that he was faced with a pro se defendant here. And, of course, you want to get as much information on the record as possible because you know that reviewing courts are going to look at you extra closely in that situation. Although the state excused two African Americans, there was a third, Mr. Johnson, who did end up sitting as the first alternate in the jury pool. And the fact that he ended up sitting as an alternate rather than a deliberating juror was based on his random placement within the veneer. It's just a matter of where he sat in the jury box. Now, the petitioner in this case makes much of the percentages, but given that the absolute numbers of jurors that we're talking about here, there's only 5 African Americans out of 28 total people, the percentages can be a little misleading. The numbers are certainly important, but percentages may not be the most helpful way of looking at the state's actions here. But you could say that the state struck 50% of the available African Americans. One could also say that 20% of the available African Americans sat as first alternates on the jury, but we're still only talking about very small numbers of people. In terms of the comparisons to both Franklin and Stevens, I think both Franklin's and Stevens can be illustrative of what other prima facie decisions are like, but of course, all prima facie decisions are going to be very fact-specific. No jury pool is ever the same. And so while we can look at both Franklin's and Stevens for illustrations of here's something where we found a prima facie case as in Stevens, here's something where there wasn't a prima facie case as in Franklin, I don't think we can rely too much on them. And in both Franklin's and Stevens, the numbers were slightly different, and of course Batson directs us to examine all of the relevant facts and circumstances surrounding jury selection, not just the absolute numbers of African Americans in the jury and how many and were in the original veneer pool. Stevens, in any event, was of course a direct appeal, and here we're in a very different level of review since we are reviewing under AEDPA. In terms of the state's questioning of Mr. Jones and Mr. Yates, this is a very different situation than the type that we had in Miller L. versus Drecke. In Miller L., the Supreme Court held that the differences in questioning between African-American veneer persons and Caucasian veneer persons was so severe that it actually appeared that the style of questioning was designed to elicit reasons to strike the African-American jurors. Now, here, the prosecutor may have asked slightly different questions of different jurors, but there's nothing to indicate that any of these questions were designed to elicit a strike. As far as the questioning went, the trial court asked open questions of the entire veneer panel, questioned each juror individually, and then at each opportunity had the opportunity to ask additional questions. As far as Mr. Yates went, he responded to an open question from the prosecutor about whether or not he'd ever been to the courthouse before. She asked him what those circumstances were and then asked the same question of, I believe, 3 other jurors who had also been to the courthouse in the past. As for Mr. Jones, all that he was asked was what the occupations of his adult children were, and I believe he had 10 adult children. 4 other persons got asked additional questions of the same type as Mr. Jones. So the style of questioning here is very different from Miller L., and I do not think the State Appellate Court was unreasonable for holding that the state's manner of questioning weighed against an inference of a prima facie case. Your Honors, here, this state appellate court noted all the facts and circumstances within jury selection, as is required by Batson, including those that weighed in petitioner's favor, but it ultimately held that the facts in his favor were outweighed and that he had not made his prima facie case. While petitioner may disagree with how the appellate court weighed these factors, he has not shown that its ultimate determination was outside the range of defensible positions, as would be required to find that it was unreasonable within the meaning of AEDPA. Unless the court has any other questions, we would urge the court to deny relief.
Thank you, Ms. Siever.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Toomey Allen, 1 minute.
May it please the court. The issue here is not whether there are race-neutral reasons for the manner in which these jurors were stricken, but rather not whether Batson's second stage was triggered. It was, because you have all you need to trigger that is a reasonable basis for, or reasonable inference for discrimination. And we have that. We have that because we have a statistical disparity, we have different questioning, and we have commonality between the jurors that served and jurors that did not serve. Now, this court made a very good point, but shouldn't the trial court have asked for race-neutral reasons? Isn't that a better practice? That would be a better practice, because that would prevent the collapsing of the Batson hearing, which is what happened here. You have the trial court and the Illinois appellate court, specifically the Illinois appellate court, making 3 separate comments about the defendant's own conduct. That is not what is the standard. The standard is, if the prima facie case is made, then there must be, you must proceed to the second stage. The state then presents its race-neutral reasons, and then the defendant has an opportunity to rebut that and present them as pretextual. We didn't get there. What we did was we went straight to the end, and the trial court dismissed it outright, saying that because there was one stricken by the defense and because there's a mixed jury, that there was no discrimination. That is not the standard. This matter should be remanded for a Batson hearing.
All right. Thank you, counsel. And you were appointed, weren't you, Ms. Tumiale?
Yes.
Thank you very much for your service to your client. You've been very diligent. Thank you and appreciate the briefs and argument of counsel. We'll take it under advisement.